Hello and welcome to another edition of the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGalliard. I'm joined, as always, by my friend, my co-host, Parker Fleming. Parker, ring the bell. It is here. It is team preview season, my friend. How are we feeling? Today is Kansas Jayhawks Day.
I honestly felt like a kid on Christmas morning this morning. I hope that I'm not like putting our expectations for this podcast too high. I was just so excited to like have a Google Doc up that you and I were both working on and getting this info in here. So I'm excited. This is fun again. I previews are probably my favorite thing that we do throughout the course of this podcast and have gotten better every year, I think. So excited to dive in to kind of do some homework on opposing teams and figure out how we can be better consumers of football this fall as we kind of watch and know what to look for and understand how a team's going to approach a season.
Yeah, previews are fun because it's unbridled hope. And then once the game starts, it all comes crashing down. But in previews, anything is possible. It's a world of dreams and magic and joy. And we can talk ourselves into Kansas winning 8 games. We will talk more about kind of our preview schedule and our setup and how we're going to evaluate these teams in a bit. But first, Parker, the big news of the last week, and as we promised in our last episode, the Turnpike Troubadours came out with a new song last Friday.
Wait, I'm very interested in that. We did not rehearse this at all. Sorry. We should mention we're on video. This is the first time we're doing a video podcast. It's something that a lot of people reached out and said, we mentioned it last week, and a lot of people said, I would watch that. I'd be interested in that. So I don't know. I think with the graphs and stuff we have and the previews that we've made, that's potentially pretty cool to like put some stuff on here, but we're doing video. And as you can see from me posting a broadcast tweet and then immediately taking it down, we don't 100% know what we're doing. So for now, we're just going to post video on YouTube and promo that and get it out there. But as we're learning and figuring out, hopefully we can continue to create content that you guys would like to listen to and that's beneficial. And I think if we get 1 million subscribers, YouTube gives us a little plaque. So that's something to work for as well, right?
Yeah, it'd be nice to hang up in my kitchen or above my desk, maybe at work. We kind of promised a little bit of behind the scenes stuff, and we'll get into more of that as well. People on YouTube can now see what happens when we had this big, long sheet, everything we're going to talk about with Kansas. And then I forget to put down a note that says, remind people that this is now a video. So nice. Thank you, Parker, for catching me.
That's how the sausage gets made, man. Wait, here's a question. Can I drink on this? Is that going to be?
Yeah,
that's fine. If we just mark it's not made for kids on YouTube, I think we're pretty okay.
Yeah. Drink. Don't say the F word. We should be okay.
I'm committing.
Cheers. Can we talk about Turnpike now?
Let's talk about Turnpike. Okay. I've listened a bunch. I've really given it some time and some thought. I would love to hear your opinion and reactions on Mean Old Son and their new single.
I like the instrumental. I think Evan could have varied the vocals a little bit more. It kind of got a little bit repetitive, some kind of whole notes that he was holding there that I wish could have been chopped up a bit. I do think there are a lot of good lines in it. The last line of the chorus, that mean old sun better rise up soon if it's ever going to set on me, I think is a pretty daggum good line. Still coming up like a rose dead in the garden waiting for the reveille is great. It is fine. It is a 7.5 out of 10, and I will take that as the first new Turnpike song we've heard in 6 years.
It has been a really long time since we've heard our new Turnpike.
6 years.
I don't want to be a Debbie Downer because I liked it, but I was pretty underwhelmed. I think specifically it felt like one of those kind of somber late tracks that they get into. Ringing in the Year, I don't even think it had the gumption of Ringing in the Year.
No.
So it felt just kind of dour almost. It wasn't a ballad. It wasn't sad. It just kind of felt melancholy.
Wrecked, I think would be a good.
Okay. But I loved Wrecked. I thought Wrecked was so much better.
But anyway, yeah.
I like Ringing in the Year too. I was saying it doesn't have the gumption of those songs. Style of those, but it just wasn't as good. It was good.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fine. It wasn't great. I was underwhelmed. So would like to hear the rest of the album. I'm not throwing anything under the bus or whatever, saying it's been 6 years. I thought we'd come out with a little fire under our asses, as it were. And it feels like, I don't know. I just have this image of him right towards the end of the first run. He would do these concerts and there's these like live videos and he would just stand there and stare and just kind of say the words. Evan Felkerwood. And this felt a little like that. And then the words felt like he was trying to say something about what had happened. And, you know, I'm always the kind of person that's like, the more you try to make something mean something, the less it actually means to me. And so it felt a little presumptuous. I don't know.
Okay. I'm not going to stop listening to it, I don't think. So we'll keep it in the rotation, see if it
grows. No, it's in the rotation. I like it.
Yeah.
And I texted you this immediately after. I think the best thing that happened is a song I'd never heard before. Billy Strings and Willie Nelson singing California Sober came up on my radio after that. And I thought, there's a song I can get into. So that's probably the best thing that happened coming out of me listening to the Turnpike song. And it's not bad. It's fine.
It's not bad. It's fine. Which, how's this for a transition, Parker? Describes the Kansas Jayhawks in the year of our Lord 2022. Not bad. Fine. Not bad. Not good, but fine. Before we launch into Kansas, let's talk a little bit about kind of what stats, what metrics we're going to use when we evaluate teams. So only going to use regular season stats, no conference championship games, no bowls, no playoff, whatever. And we've broken this down. Really, you have kind of set up the standard here into power ratings. So, Parker, if you don't mind walking us through kind of how we're going to weight each category for each team.
Yes. So, one, knowing that we're kind of pivoting to Big 12 and that we are going to have different listeners that maybe not as familiar, we'll talk about the stats that we use as we and why they're important. And we'll try to do that more as we go, especially in these previews, because the idea is that, you know, a Kansas fan who doesn't know who we are listens to this and then likes us. And so we want to explain it to them. And then, you know, a Houston fan in 6 weeks listens to this and likes it. And so we want to make sure we're kind of educating as we go. It helps us to formalize those things too. So we'll introduce these metrics and stats that we like and why we think those are important. And then, only going to use regular season stats. Postseason stuff's so noisy. So you'll hear us say TCU was 12-0 last year when they played, you know, three more games after that or whatever. And so, postseason's so noisy with opt-outs and with the extra time to get a matchup and all that. Like, again, if we're just trying to ascertain the general quality of a team, I think it's more informative to kind of stand in their regular season ratings. And so we'll do that. And then, we're going to try and frame everything as power ratings. I think in the last couple of years, we've done these really elaborate previews of the running back room and the offensive line and quarterbacks and wide receivers and broken them down unit by unit. And at the end been like, okay, cool. I think they're pretty all right. And what we're going to try and do this year, be a little more formalized by that. And we'll share the sheet, so that you can kind of follow along and do this as well. Of how we're doing this, but we're going to break every team down into a power rating out of 100. We're going to put pen to paper here. So to start, we're going to break down each unit into a point value, and then those will add up to 100, and that's going to be our team strength, if you will. Mm-hmm. So quarterback's worth 15 points, running back is worth 10, wide receiver is worth 10, offensive line is worth 15, defensive line worth 15, linebacker worth 10 and defensive back worth 10. Coaches and special teams, 15 overall. That gets us to a clean 100. So as we break down each unit, we'll talk about them in our normal way. And at the end, we'll kind of have a conclusion. We'll say, here's my general assessment. I'm giving them this grade out of 10. Then we'll be able to add that up and calculate, you know, how well we think they do against an average schedule, the probability they'd make a bowl against an average schedule. And again, just some empirical flesh and bone to kind of how we've normally talked about teams. Should be a fun exercise because we can kind of keep track of how well did these age, how well did they do against the spread and all that stuff as we kind of do this as well. So should be fun and should be a little more tangible and a little more accessible, I think, for us to give these precise numbers as well, that of course we'll be wrong and we'll abandon very quickly. Yeah. I'm certain. We did a little of this with the coaching episode a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. So like I had to go back and listen to make sure I wasn't going to violate my ranking of Lance Leipold for Kansas and had to go back and figure out.
Oh, I did not do that because I did not write those down in the same place that I wrote down everything else.
Me neither. I had to go back and listen to the episode and try to figure it out. But I'm being morally consistent and you can be a hypocrite all you want. But as you said, Parker, I think this kind of adds a little bit more context and consistency to our ratings, and it's something new we're trying this year. And I'm excited to get into it because I think we're going to be able to you know, kind of get a better handle on the entire conference, especially because there are four new teams, man. I mean, we had to wrangle all these things. It's hard to keep straight sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, it's literally at the top of our preview. What Kansas uniform is the best uniform combo? Because they have about eight different options. White, blue, white.
Don't read all
white,
these.
Red, red.
Don't read
blue,
all these.
Blue, red. Red, red, red. Blue, white, red. They're the American flag.
I wrote this. I wrote some of these in here. And I don't even know that I love this question generally. But I thought that, you know, they are a team that really doesn't have a uniform identity. And they do wear, they're probably as varied as TCU, if not more so, who I think is the most varied in the conference in terms of wearing weird things and doing weird combinations. But because it's white, you know, it's white, red, and blue, they get some really, really weird combos. Like they'll do like a blue, red, white or something and move it around and have three colors. So I thought that was worth, I thought that was worth discussing. I think that we're maybe losing each other.
Well, can you hear me now?
I can, but I'm still frozen on you drinking.
The video's still working.
Do you want to turn your camera off and on? Is it me? Sure. I don't know. Do I look good?
No, it's probably me. I love technical difficulties.
Look, we're not cutting any of this. Our users are just going to, you guys are just going to deal with this. You do get to see my very dirty background room there. Just got to see the laundry chair. Everybody has a laundry chair. It happens.
Am I back?
You're back. Back and better than ever. Grant, let's cut the uniform segment. I don't mean cut it. I just mean let's move on. I don't care.
The answer is white, blue, white. So Lance Leipold comments from spring. UNN found some comments from spring ball, which they didn't even call it a spring game. I think they called it a spring spectacular. I tried to find it as well, or something of that nature.
The real question about spring for Kansas is really, this is serious hard-hitting journalism. Was Snoop Dogg and or stripper poles involved in Kansas's spring game? If anyone was there, could you confirm? We've seen it before. Crazier things have happened. I love that. I love that, like, the teams would do the crazy stuff with basketball. They should do that for football and just have these absurd spectacles.
Snoop's not coming to Lawrence for Kansas football, man. He's just not.
Well, that's true. That's true. Do you remember Bill Self with a big old chain?
Yes. No, I remember. He had the combined cannon.
Great times.
Which he actually for recruits.
I wouldn't say that I'm moving. Allegedly. Moving on. Leipold's comments from spring. He said, I think we did get everything we wanted to get done in spring. Specifically noted there's some aspects of the game, like special teams, that he felt didn't go well. He said they would clean it up in the fall. And it's just a really good coach speak here. I thought we came out of this a more physical football team, which is great coach speak, but also something interesting because you feel like a lot of people don't want to be very physical in spring because you don't want to get injured. And perhaps this is kind of revealing that there's a little bit of toughness that Leipold would like to see in this Kansas team, perhaps related to maybe giving up a lot of points down the stretch and losing a bunch of games that we'll talk about. And he went on NFL Network and specifically said, you know, we have an outstanding young quarterback in Jalen Daniels, who, along with his teammates, they have been able to put some energy back in our program. And we feel excited about where our future is going. Our administration's made a commitment towards us, and we're excited about the future. So I don't know how many times, Grant, Kansas football has been able to say they're excited about the future.
Yeah. And also just giving Leipold that kind of mandate with his staff, with Daniels, with all those guys, that's got to be kind of exciting for a coach that, listen, got to six wins last year, and that was huge. And the administration kind of making that commitment is something that hasn't been seen in Kansas football since Mangino, maybe. I don't know when the last coach was that actually had a mandate. Certainly not less.
We're going to see. Well, and even that went pretty south pretty quickly. Yeah. So who knows? Believed what they were going to do. And Grant, I don't know the stadium's been I don't know the stadium's been updated in forever.
No.
So that's pretty huge that they're going to do that for sure.
Certainly wasn't David Bailey, I can tell you that. So last year we kind of alluded to it. Kansas goes 6-6 in the regular season. They lost the Liberty Bowl in three overtimes to your Arkansas Razorbacks, Parker, 55-53. It's the most wins since 2008. Their first bowl game since 2008 when they beat Minnesota in the Insight Bowl. And Desmond Briscoe was the MVP. So if you like guys,
that's a name.
Desmond Briscoe was a guy. They went 3-6 in conference, finished 7th in the Big 12. It's the first time Kansas, not 3-6 in conference. That's 3-6. First time Kansas hasn't finished last in the Big 12 since 2014, when they only beat Iowa State. It's only the second time in the new Big 12 Kansas hasn't finished last. Leipold won as many conference games in one season as David Beatty and Les Miles did combined in 6 seasons, and it's their most conference wins since 2008. Overall, that is a success. Every year we say, hey, listen, Kansas, don't be a joke. They were certifiably not a joke last year.
You know, a lot of people on the internet like to take credit for things, Grant, and I think that we can very much justifiably take credit for Kansas not being a meme. And that being, you know, that's what we've said for a couple of years. I think we're firmly in not meme territory. This is, again, I'm not saying that Kansas is on the trajectory towards a national championship, and we'll talk about expectations here at the end of this. But I think what we're looking at is a team that with the right development cycles could get the right talent in and could be a fringe, maybe possibly double digit win team once every 6 or 7 years. That would be a step up for this program, consistently winning, consistently going to a bowl. You see that 2008, that was Mangino, the last time that they were good at all. And so when we're looking at last season, I think we're saying it was a resounding success for the Kansas program. I think they dealt with quarterback injury, which everybody, you know, everybody deals with injury generally, but they went to a bowl game, which I told our friend Andy Mitz was outside of my 95% confidence interval in terms of my projection for the season. I think Oklahoma State being the walking wounded at a precarious time certainly helped Kansas get to a bowl game. But again, injuries are part of the game, and that's certainly part of it. But they did get to that bowl game, and I think that's huge for proof of concept of Leipold, because this roster wasn't very good last year. And proof of concept that Kansas can be a team that wins football games and that competes, even if they aren't very, very talented across the board.
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned Oklahoma State getting hurt at kind of the right time for Kansas. Kansas really fell off on the back end. Started 5-0, finished 1-7. First five games, 41.6 points per game for, 24 points per game allowed. That's a 17.6 point differential. Their combined opponent record was 30-31. In their last 8 games, 31.9 points per game for, 42.6 points per game allowed. That is a negative 10.7 point differential for what, a 28.3 point swing against Kansas. And that's because their combined opponent record was 65-42 over those games. The records of teams they beat: 4-7, 5-7, 8-5, 9-4, 4-8, 7-6. That includes an FCS team. We'll get to that a little bit later in terms of why we think that happened. But Parker, this is a team that really came out of the gates hot and then basically film existed.
Struggling, just struggling. When we talk about quarterbacks, I think we'll specifically talk about the differences there and what might have happened. I think that if we're looking at 2022 Kansas and looking at what happened, we're saying let's be real. Tennessee Tech, 4-7 FCS team. Great. Mm-hmm. Got your win. In the past, that has been a question mark for the Kansas Jayhawks. Illinois State, I think, tried an onside kick with a chance to win against Les Miles in the 1-11 year, I think. Just very, very bad. West Virginia, very bad football team. And that is 55-42, but kind of misleading because it went to overtime and Kansas scored, and then West Virginia threw an interception and Kansas returned it in overtime, which is weird, but go get it. So that looks like a blowout. It was really a one score game. Houston, they were down big very early and had to kind of go to the whiteboard and mess around. And then Duke, again, a team that in a similar spot to Kansas, maybe with a little bit better of a roster, certainly another pretty good quarterback in Riley Leonard, but couldn't really find itself until later in the season against a weaker ACC schedule. And then they beat Iowa State 14-11, an Iowa State team that just absolutely refused to score in any way, shape, or form. So you can kind of excuse all five of those wins, not excuse, but justify all five of those wins by saying that, you know, they did enough to stay ahead, but as they got into the stretch of the Big 12 schedule, as they got into the stretch of having to have people know who they are, be ranked. Kansas was ranked 19th at one point. As they were ranked, as they became, you know, hey, we need to actually prep for them, and this is not a bye week for us. Things got a little bit rougher there, especially on the defensive side of things.
Yeah, I mean, you look, it's a pretty consistent, but okay, 41 to 31 points for game four over that split, fine. But 24 to 42.6, yikes. It's not great. By the way, apologies. I'm going to fight AT&T if they are in my dojo. They own my Wi-Fi. Parker, do you want to talk about kind of how they ranked last year? Or did I miss that when I was out?
No, you're totally good. I talked about just, again, who they beat and why the 5-0 might have been a little deceptive, even if it was, you know, 5-0. Kansas ranked 31st in points for in the nation, 118th in points against. The differential, negative 3.82 points per game, is 84th overall. In the conference, just again, their rankings, that's 32.1 points per game scored. That's 7th out of 14. 36.0 points against, that's 14th out of 14. I'm including the new Big 12 schools in this, one, to get in the habit of it, but two, just to say, you know, not accounting for opponent, just looking at some of these first 30 stats.
Really bad. Yeah.
And then differential was 13th out of 14th. If we do an expected win percentage with the Pythagorean kind of expectation, which is, you know, points scored over points scored and points allowed, just kind of a expected win ratio, 0.437 was their expected win ratio, which would have been 12th out of 14. They actually won 0.454, which is 11th out of 14 in the Big 12. So slightly outperformed. Their difference between actual and expected win probability or win percentage was 0.0173 percentage points. That's good enough for 8th in the conference. So close to top half in terms of outperforming kind of what you would expect based on their point differentials throughout the season. So again, narrow margins for Kansas. They came out on top. You might argue they had guys who could make plays at times and keep them in games that they had no business being in 2 years ago, even. And so that's certainly a step forward, even as we start to scrape through and maybe be a little skeptical about the results. I think that we can still celebrate the results and say it was exactly what I think we had said Kansas needed out of a season.
Yeah, it no one in Lawrence is like mad about how that turned out, I don't think. 6-7, great, made a bowl, fun bowl game, exciting, all good. Unfortunately, it didn't really help their recruiting. They were 68th in the class of 2023, no four stars. Parker, as you pointed out, 4 Texas kids, 3 California kids. So they are at least getting some out-of-state talent coming in, but it's nothing that you're really going to. Yeah, I don't think any of those guys are going to see the field immediately when they get there.
No, I think as we were doing our there's one offensive transfer and then 2 or 3 defensive transfers, I think, mm-hmm. that might help. But in terms of recruits, not really seeing guys that are just going to come on the field and be an impact. And one, that's kind of how college football works for these lower school teams is, you know, if a guy could come in and be a Power 5 starter off the bench in college or right out of high school, he would go to a better program, right? Right. And so there's some of that differentiation there. Not great, although I think Leipold and his crew would pride themselves on being developers of talent, not necessarily acquirers of talent. And so that's not as big a red flag, especially when we do the work of differentiating expectations for the Kansas Jayhawks, which is they're not competing for a national championship. Frankly, Grant, they're not competing for a conference championship at this point. They are fighting tooth and nail just to stay alive here and to be a relevant football team. So the recruiting is not that big of an issue, I think, overall, in my opinion right now.
Yeah, well, and the good news, I suppose, is Kansas does return an incredible amount of production, like 2nd overall in the nation, 1st in the conference. 85% of their returning production comes back to Lawrence. That's 91% on offense, 1st in the nation, and 80% on defense. That's 10th in the nation, 1st in the Big 12. So by far the most returning starters in the conference. Parker, what
do you think about returning production? It only matters if your returning production is good. We've long said that. So that's what we got to keep in mind here. And I think that it's very, very easy to say returning production means you're going to win. And I just want to point out, I just looked this up. And because I looked this up, you have to hear it. In 2022, TCU returned 82% of returning production. That's ninth overall in the nation. That's the most in the Big 12. They were the Big 12 runners up. 2021, Iowa State was fourth overall in the nation, 88% returning production, first in the Big 12. They were fourth in the conference and went 7-6. And 2020, weird year, but Oklahoma State at 80%, ninth overall. They went third in the conference. And in 2019, Baylor was 75%, 20th overall, Big 12 runners up. So I think there's two things there. One, the talent level at Kansas is lower than the talent level of any of those four teams. Maybe Iowa State's close, but even then, their development was a little bit different place in terms of depth and talent. And two, just because you return production does not mean that you're going to return good production does not mean that you're going to be good. Their returning production in 2022, Grant, 82%. So still very good, as much as TCU had coming into 2022.
Yeah.
And 75% of their offense, 89% of their defense. Grant, a lot of good that 89% returning production on defense did them, I'll say.
Hey, that is an experienced unit. They have chased down many a receiver that has run past them. They are well versed in the art of stamina, I would say, above anything else. Parker, you have, I couldn't think of the word stamina there. That was tough.
We're doing this live and figuring this out, turn your camera on and turn it back off. I think you're freezing on my end. I don't know if it's the recording, man, it might not be anything. We're just doing it. We're just here. We're live. Our fans like us. That's all right.
Yeah, sure. Or maybe they don't. I don't care. Parker, do you have the, Kansas, your graph, I would say, from CFB graphs from, what is this? The last game of the season? Last year,
this is going into the Liberty Bowl, so regular season overall, and I'll use these to talk about each unit. So, Grant, let's start in the offense if you'd like.
Sure, let's do it.
Yeah. Okay. So, offense under coordinator Andy Kotelnicki, who has been with Leipold forever, is still leading the pack for offensive coordinator. I'd most like to go get a beer with. Again, if you just have not seen his picture, he just looks like an affable guy. Kansas's offense ranked sixth in raw EPA per play last season, 41st in success rate. They were 17th in passing success rate, 82nd in rushing success rate. So a big drop off there. 15th in points per drive, first in EPA expected points added per pass, but 40th in EPA per rush. So again, we have a low success rate like Kansas did on rushing and high explosiveness. That means like they're not getting a lot of explosive runs, but when they do break off a big run, when they do get a successful run, it's a big chunk play. So very explosive, even if not very efficient. Echo rate, Grant, we said we're going to explain some metrics. This is just a measure of quality possessions. How often do you generate a drive that's more likely to score than it is not? Roughly equates to getting a first down inside the opponent's 40-yard line. They were 19th at 59.3, but Grant, they were 34th in points per quality possession, points per echo, 4.40. So better at generating those quality possessions than they are at finishing them. We know that finishing drives matters a lot. So that's a little bit of a knock on the offense there. Finally, we love early downs and late down splits. They were 21st in early downs EPA, and they were 10th in third and fourth down conversion rate. So pretty good balance there. They did extend drives on third and fourth down a little bit more often than they did get those big plays on early down. And we'll talk about that split, but a very explosive offense that was not flawless, but certainly scored enough to get them where they needed to go at any point throughout the season.
They had a lot of guys that did their jobs, and that sounds like lame football, like coach speak, but we'll talk about this, especially when we get to the wide receiver crew, but they had guys that just made plays and didn't move the offense backward. I mean, Daniels going down Jalen Daniels, however that worked out. And just them switching out almost kind of seamlessly. And then the two-headed tandem at running back, you got the wide receiver room plus Mason Fairchild at tight end. They have weapons, guys that just don't make a ton of mistakes. it's not a flashy offense, although when it breaks down, they can do weird things. It's just a good, solid offense.
Yeah, and I think they incorporate option stuff enough to make it look like there's a lot of bells and whistles, when in reality, they do like the same three or four things just in combination with each other. And it's an offense that has a really strong sense of identity. I think that's really important to note, is that Kansas, and you have to, when the talent level is not necessarily there, you've got to know what you're asking guys to do, and you've got to have guys that can do what you ask them to do. So there's kind of some central tenets of the Kansas offense that, again, if you're watching as an outsider and just want to watch them on the field this fall, you're going to see a lot of mostly 11 personnel. That's one running back, one tight end. They'll do 12 personnel a pretty good amount. They'll slide Casey, that second tight end, who's as beefy as Fairchild. But both of the tight ends have a very Jack Black kind of quality to them in terms of being girthy but agile, like surprisingly agile. I think about the episode of Community where Jack Black was in it, and Troy, played by Donald Glover, says his ratio of hip kick to girth is astounding, because Jack Black does a high kick. And I think that's kind of what I'm thinking about with the tight ends. Just like, sure, Mason Fairchild, you have no business being that sneaky and that big. Mm. So we'll talk about those tight ends. They'll do 12 personnel. They'll put both of them down, and you can even H-back some in there. But a couple times you actually saw them put Fairchild in the backfield to block, which was interesting, because, as we'll talk about later, the running backs are not good in pass pro. No. They want to run. They'll pass if necessary. That's kind of my perception of watching them. They're going to option you to death. Every play is going to have reads. It's going to have pre-snap and post-snap options. They're going to motion Grimm a ton of the time. Arc, orbit, return, they get weird motion. They're just going to move it around because they want to create leverage. They want to move the defense. They want you looking somewhere. It's almost like dangling. It's like a magician does something with one hand while he's doing something else behind his back, so you don't see the trick. That's kind of the principle here. And they take advantage of two big things. One, plus one in the run game with Daniels. So they're going to treat him like a running back who can throw. That's going to throw off your numbers. That's going to change the equations on assignments for RPOs and for the option. And two, the linebackers are going to bite on play action, and they find a way to get their tight ends super open off of that play action in that intermediate game. So I think that's really interesting as well. Those kind of two things are really, really important there. They ran almost twice as much gap last year as zone in the run game. But there are some reports out of spring that they're going to do a lot more zone this year as well, try and change some things up. Grant, I included for us just two diagrams. I don't think those are very useful for the general public at this point, but it is interesting to see. I mean, they really do kind of line up almost like a triple option team. Again, once you watch them enough and start to see the structures, you kind of recognize that they're doing the same things, just paired differently. Yeah. And so it really does feel like they're almost lining up in the flex bone, and they're
but it's just
doing the same thing over and over again. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, this is a quick aside. Do you remember the first time you saw pistol being used effectively? Because for me, it was Nevada.
Because Kyle Brotzman missed another friggin' field goal. You got to go to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah. Not great. I mean, like you said, they disguise things really well. It's the same concepts over and over again. That doesn't make it less effective because they disguise it so well. It's just
That's certainly not a knock to be like, oh, it's actually simple. I'm saying it's actually kind of elegant in its simplicity. Again, like one of those triple option teams, one of the service academies, because they have these structures and they can pair these structures together, and they can build those they can build those structures on top of each other in a way that really puts defenders in conflict. I posted a video on my timeline earlier today of a Kansas State defensive back who we don't like to pick on players if we can't help it. So I'm not going to pick on him specifically, but who bit on the option about as hard as someone can bite. And then when the motion guy takes the ball outside, he runs and gets stiff-armed. It was like the worst combination of plays that you could possibly see, but it's a perfect example of even good players get stuck by this offense, and all they need is one big play. That's really what they're going after here, is they are a boom and bust offense. So, Grant, there's a couple big questions I have about this offense before we break into the specific units, as it were. There's tape, right? Big question I have is there's tape on Daniels, on Fairchild, who is so sneaky. on Luke Grimm, on Arnold. I mean, these guys are known commodities, and teams are taking this seriously. How can the Jayhawks create with this target on their back, with people not treating this like a buy, which, you know, they haven't always done that. It's not that as simple as that, but it is the reality that, like,
well, Texas was doing it for quite a few years.
But yeah. Yeah. You can not practice as hard against Kansas and still probably win. They returned 4/5 of the offensive line, but they have to replace the left tackle. I didn't love their pass protection last year. That's a big question for me. That makes me very nervous. I think this offensive line is something I'm a little bit worried about. And then how do you maximize Daniel's excellent rushing ability while minimizing the chance of injury? Because that's a big thing. If he's not out there on the field, it's a different game. So those are kind of the three big questions we have for Kansas going into the 2023 season.
Yeah. And just to hit real quick, notable departures, left tackle Earl Bostic Jr. Went undrafted free agent to the Cowboys, and running back Kai Thomas transferred.
Which is like kind of, yeah. I mean, he had like, what, 7 carries or something?
Yeah. I mean, he did transfer, but I wouldn't really necessarily call it a key departure. They bring in 2 tackles, Logan Brown from Wisconsin and Lovell, whose first name is currently escaping me,
Wait, it's Logan Brown, right?
Logan Brown from Wisconsin, yes.
And it's like John Lovell. It's boring.
John Lovell from town. Not Jim Lovell, who was on the Apollo 13. Fun fact. That was Tom Hanks' character.
Spencer. Sorry. Sorry, Spencer.
Parker, let's talk about Jalen Daniels.
Dude, let's do it. All right, so this is our first one where we're going to do our conclusion and our grade. I know I'm so happy. 36 minutes into the podcast, we were starting on our first positional unit. So this is very much in line with the Kansas previews of old. So we'll break down all of this. And at the end, we'll have a very clear, all right, let's talk about our conclusion and our grade here. So Jalen Daniels, very fun quarterback, capital V, capital F, 90.0 QBR quarterback rating, according to ESPN, which is an expected points added based measure of how much you contributed to your team. That was first in the nation. But he was 66th in the passing contribution of QBR with 38.1 points added. He was 35th in the rushing contribution with 12.2 points added. Why Jalen Daniels is number one in QBR is that he was first in the sacks contribution in terms of avoiding sacks, minimizing sacks, -1.9 points added there, was first in the nation. So Daniels was a good rusher, was an okay passer, was excellent at moving around in the pocket, avoiding the big negative play, keeping the offense in front of the chains, or at least not as behind the chains as they would have been had he gotten sacked. And that is huge. I think that right there, I don't know if I'm overstating this, that to me kind of says exactly who Jalen Daniels is. Like, mediocre passer, pretty good rusher, amazing at avoiding sacks.
He has a really, really good sense of how to move around in the pocket, especially because Kansas didn't really offer him a lot of clean pockets last year. And we'll talk about this a little bit better. He's actually probably more dynamic when he has to move around and kind of innovate than he is just standing back there by himself. I agree. That's a complete strength in this game.
You wonder how much of that is like nerves. Nerves is too little, but like overthinking. I mean, think about how many times in your life you overthink. And if you just like, oh, shoot, I've got to do this, you do the right thing. Yep. I wonder if that's not the case a little bit with Daniels, and that's just a little inexperience, and that might improve as he goes on, that he can use that ability to improvise in more structured ways.
Sure. Let's put it that way. We started 8 games last year. Well, first off, is 2.9% TWP rate. Parker, TWP rate is turnover-worthy play rate. Yes, which is 112th at FBS and 9th in the Big 12. So basically three out of every 100 times you drop back, he's one out of every 33 times, he's going to do something stupid.
Which is quite good. You want him throwing away. Yeah. You want it getting it where only his guys can get it. So that's low. That carries a little more signal than like just interceptions, of which I think he had 4. But generally, I mean, again, that's 112th as in like, the lowest.
Yeah.
So that's very good. Those are low ranks, but those are very good
right.
Numbers for turnover worthy plays.
Yeah. I mean, he's not just avoiding sacks by throwing it like into the arms of an awaiting defender. He's avoiding sacks and making a smart decision with the ball. He completed 70.4% of his attempted passes on a 9.2 average depth of target, which is ninth in the Big 12. And Parker, you have some really interesting notes here on pressure, where he was pressured on 29.2% of his dropback, which is ninth most. And he was better under pressure. 74.3 adjusted completion percentage under pressure.
Best in the Big 12 under pressure at 70.3% adjusted completion percentage, which again, we use that adjusted completion percentage because it controls for drops. It also controls for throwaways, which when you get pressured, if you throw it away, that's a win, right? That could have been a negative play. That could have been a sack. Three of his 13 touchdowns came when he was pressured. And his pressure to sack ratio was 7.1%. That was second best in the Big 12 behind only Will Howard, which I find very surprising, but sure. Will Howard got the ball out very quickly. Will Howard, the Michael Vick of the Plains, I think they're calling him. We'll talk about him in future episodes, but, I think my favorite tweet from last season was Will Howard has a PhD in beating TCU, because for whatever reason, he's just great. This is not a Kansas State podcast. I'm sure the Kansas people that are listening to this are furious that I even said Will Howard right now. Pressure to sack ratio, Grant, is like one of the most stable metrics in terms of translation from college to pro success, because it speaks to your ability of being able to create, right? And so there's this hierarchy of like, are you a good quarterback, that starts with, can you make the open throws? And God love them, a lot of college quarterbacks can't make the open throws, right? And then can you make the second read? Can you make a throw into a tight window? Can you make a throw under pressure? Can you extend the play and create under pressure? That's kind of the biggest thing that's important going into the NFL. So not that we're a podcast that's going to talk about college football only in terms of NFL. We're just saying this is an important stat that tells us about the quality of a quarterback overall, even if it's just pressure. He's second in the Big 12 at this pressure to sack ratio. 19.6 average yards on his touchdown throws. So it's not necessarily like he was throwing absolute bombs downfield when they were scoring, but still was able to pretty consistently move the ball downfield, find the open guy in space, and give them a fighting chance at making a move there.
So that's Jaden Daniels through the air. On the ground, I really think they can use him more. And I know he had some health issues last year where they probably wanted to keep him safe, but he only ran the ball designed 52 times, and he had 17 scrambles. 47.1% success rate on scrambles, 55.8% success rate on rushes. Most of his scrambles, Parker, 76.4%, came on first and second down, which makes me think that he knows on third down, hey, I got to get the ball out and throw it away, or try to make a play downfield and not try to scramble to pick up three. Which, to me, I think is a smart decision.
Yes, notably different than, say, 2019 Max Duggan, who, poor guy, was running for his life. He's making things happen on third downs when they're running or when they're passing, which I think is really interesting. And then, and kind of with that, like 45% of his designed runs were on first down alone. Not first and second down, but on first down alone. He's very much an open runner. They want him running where there's space, there's multiple options, and having a credible threat. When they go to those third and fourth down power situations, they went to Devin Neal, which, who wouldn't? We'll talk about him in a minute. But had 52.4% success rate on those short yardage situations. So Daniels was very much not your KJ Jefferson, not your Jalen Hurts, not your bruiser in the short yardage situation. They want a spread running game. They want him to be a plus one. They want on first and second down to make you choose, do I tackle Jalen Daniels, or do I let him get the ball out downfield to one of the guys that might sneak open?
And just a brief note on his backup, Jason Bean, played in 5 games, started 4. KU was 1-4 in games with Bean as the primary quarterback, but that is kind of indicative of the slide that Kansas went on in the second half of the season, which is when Bean played the most. The defense allowed 36.8 points per game in those games. Only the Tech game was really bad, but they still gave up 43, and only 10 of those are arguably on Bean. It was interception to strip sack.
Yeah, the Tech game, he threw a bad pick, and they scored field goal after that, and then they did a strip sack for 10 where he fumbled. I mean, he's got tackled, whatever. Like, Bean completed 71.2% of his attempted passes. It's eighth in the Big 12 on an ADOT of 11.1, which is most in the Big 12. Highest ADOT.
Yeah, he was slinging it.
I'm not willing to say Kansas went on a slide because Jason Bean replaced Jalen Daniels. No. There was a drop-off-ish in the offense, but the defense was so bad, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah. So, Parker, let's get to our conclusions here.
Okay.
I'm a fan of Jalen Daniels' ability to make plays out of nothing. I'm pretty sure you talked about sort of that innate, hey, stop thinking and just throw the ball. I'm pretty sure I raved about his arm angle or something heading in the last year where like he could change slots and he would sling it as needed. I hope he gets more opportunities with good health to become a true dual threat. But I like what I see out of Daniels. I think with film on him, he'll aggress a bit. But give me, out of 15 points, I weigh him as an 11.
Okay. I like it. I'm very close there with you. I think this is actually a pretty deep room. Jason Bean is more than viable option for a bowl team. And I obviously the ceiling's a lot higher with Daniels. I am knocking this whole unit down a little bit just because Daniels' accuracy in a clean pocket, 66.2%, is not great. But it's not necessarily his fault. You know, he's learning, whatever. So still a very high overall grade, 12 out of 15 for me. Going to be one of the higher graded quarterback rooms, I think, in the in the conference for me.
Right. Well, until we get to Quinn and Arch. And can you rate somebody at 17? I don't know how that works.
Dude, Malik Murphy, is the backup's backup better than the starter? That's where we're going in Texas. I'm very excited about that.
Parker, let's get to the running back room. Neil and Hyshaw, the law firm, back, both players. You have a note here about seeing Bean maybe in the backfield.
I wouldn't be surprised if we saw them get weird with Bean. Okay. Don't Google that phrase.
I am biting my tongue. Go ahead.
Let the reader understand. We said we weren't marking this for kids. We're marking this not for kids on YouTube. So I'm okay with that. I think the big deal is going to be like when number 9, Jason Bean, is on the field, you just got to find where he is and think, all right, something's going on. They will like line him up out and motion him in the backfield. He can throw, he can chuck it. We saw it in the TCU game last year, I think. Among a couple others, I think in the Texas Tech game, he had a couple good passes as well. So I think they could get super weird here with Bean in the backfield and kind of have two quarterbacks. Again, Leipold's an innovative guy, and necessity is the mother of invention. And if the wrinkles in the offense have been ironed out by opponents, you got to create some new wrinkles. So I think that's the most natural way to do it. Also, little insider info, heard they were messing around with that in spring just a little bit. So, I actually like that. I don't think Jason Bean should like take a handoff and run the ball, but I think that just being in the backfield and having to be accounted for is certainly gives a lot of gravity to the offense.
Yeah. So it's a two-man backfield. Devin Neal and Daniel Hyshaw combined for 75.6% of non-quarterback rushing attempts. Parker, you somehow found that Devin Neal, so he's 5'11", 210. He played outfield in high school.
Dude, if you go to the small school, it's easier to play multiple sports, evidently. But that's a big old center fielder, man.
Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead and get this here now. Does Devin Neal qualify for brick shithouse territory?
Okay, you wrote that he did. 5'11", 210.
That is a stout man.
He's a big dude. Barrel-chested, if you will.
Yes.
And fast.
I think he qualifies. And fast, too. That's the thing.
What we need... Okay, but here's my only thing about that is like... In 1990, he would have been like the biggest running back anyone's ever seen.
Yeah, he'd been a fullback. Yeah.
We live in the world of Derrick Henrys. Guys who are getting bigger and more athletic. What does it actually mean to be a brick shithouse TM?
I think brick shithouse TM is, it does vary by height. But if you're 5'11 and 210, you're sturdy. You're a stocky
absolutely.
Boy.
Spark plug?
Spark plug. No, Deuce Vaughn's a spark plug.
Okay. Okay. Fair.
Not to use another Kansas State example of an our Jayhawks podcast. But,
Darren Sproles isn't. Wait, shoot. So I think if you're under 5'10 and you're over 200, you are butterball, regardless of how fast. That's objectively true. And then if you're under 5'10 and you're under like 195, then you're in spark plug territory. Again, presuming that you're good. You have to be good for any of these designations. But there's this kind of nebulous like 195 to 225, 5'10 to 6'1 kind of designation where I'm not 100% sure where we draw the line. Because a lot of running backs are like that. A lot of running backs are in there.
I think to quote Justice Potter Stewart, I know it when I see it. And I'm calling Devin Neal a brick shit house.
Devin Neal's a big old boy. He's a big old boy. I agree.
Big old boy. You noted here that he improved and worked on speed in 2022. He averaged 6.3 yards per attempt, which is second in the Big 12 on the sixth most carries in the Big 12. He's a legitimately good running back.
I think fine. Yeah. Very good.
Fifth in the Big 12, 9 touchdowns, 9th in yards after contact with 2.94 per rush. He only forced 38 missed tackles, which isn't a ton, especially on the sixth most carries.
That coupled with fifth in 10 plus yard runs, 18.2% was his rate of breakaways, which a little bit higher than some of the guys ahead of him in total runs. I still don't love it's got to be handed to him a little bit last year. I'm not saying that's predictive. I'm just saying I didn't love the after contact kind of the breakaway ability. I don't know that he has great burst. And it's very unscientific, but like you don't see the Chris Berman whoop. You don't see the whoop with Devin Neal a lot. You see the, oh, that's open and he's going to run through it. And that's good. But like, he doesn't make a guy miss as much. He doesn't bounce off contact and kind of keep going. So that's my one knock on him, because you're going to get hit a lot in the Big 12. And the way they're playing defense now is not that you have to just run through the open hole and then kind of make guys miss in the secondary. Like, you've got to be able to fight through contact. So I'm a little worried about that, but still a very good running back.
Sure. Not really a threat in the passing game. He's fifth on the team in receptions, but
none.
0.89 yards per route run on 0.98. And 33% of his yards came on one target. So he is a check down machine.
Check downist. Yeah. Which is a valuable role, but in terms of a modern spread offense, we're not going to – I'm not as worried about Devin Neal on a wheel route as I am Deuce Vaughn on a wheel route or an angle route.
I will say I'm much more intrigued by Devin Neal than most. 6.3 yards per attempt is nothing to sneeze at, especially with the line he was playing behind. I'm not as high on Highshaw. I'm at about this – probably about the same as you do. I have this room as a 7 at running back.
Yeah.
7 out of 10.
Yeah. I have 7 out of 10. I think that's a great place to start the season, saying I see the upside where Neal, 4-star recruit, right? Very athletic guy, could be, with the right combination of success of scheme and the offensive line clicking, could move up to an 8 or 9, right? But it could also be a 5 or 6 if the game stalls. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of back and forth there a little bit. So I think the drop off from Neal to Highshaw isn't super stark, but like, Highshaw's not great. Bean could add some funky wrinkles. I kind of factored that in a little bit. So much of this room depends on Daniels and the offensive line and kind of how they create this. I'm firmly convinced they are good enough for what Kansas needs. Even if, like I mentioned, I don't love Neal's tackles avoidance breakaway. I feel like that's kind of a knock on him. I think this room is very much so good enough for what Kansas wants to do. So I'll say 7 out of 10 as well here.
I like it. All right. Moving on to the receivers, an amazing amount of returning production in this receiver room. Graham, Arnold, Skinner, Fairchild, all back.
Dude, that's everybody. Those four
of their total targets.
That's 64% of their total targets. And if you factor in Casey and Neal, who are kind of very much tertiary options, you have 80% of your targets coming back. Like, dude, this room. Okay, before we talk about the specifics here, this room is so. If you were going to create a wide receiver room out of nothing, you would pick guys of each of these type. Like, they have exactly everyone that you would want. It's so interesting to me. The composition of this room is so damn versatile. And even if I'm going to be diplomatic, even if the athletic ceiling and the is a little bit lower than perhaps some other wide receiver rooms that we're going to talk about this season, they have so many guys that have a very good sense of what their role is. Yeah. And they have such a good sense of how to get those guys to run their roles. I mean, I'm in love with this room. Like, my grade is going to be lower than it sounds like I'm talking right now, but like, I'm in love with this wide receiver room. I think it's hilarious. It's just like, it is like a middle schooler said, here's what I need. And he's right. Like, it's very good. Yeah.
There are no dudes, but there's an abundance of guys into the right type of guys. Dude. Yeah.
Guys.
So guys many left guys. And right. I mean, let's start with this. It kind of on that note. So you start with Lawrence Arnold, 6'3", 200. Okay, here is your I am a wide receiver build. You have Luke Grimm, 6 foot, 190. Here is your I am a slot receiver build. You have Quentin Skinner, 6'5", 195. I am a tall man who can catch a football. Put me out wide. And then you have Mason Fairchild. I'm 6'5", 260. No one can stop me. I'm a tight end. That's all you want.
And again,
that's perfect.
And again, Fairchild has that Jack Black quality of high kick to girth ratio.
Agile, 6'5", 260.
Like a jungle cat. Yeah, just very lithe. Okay, so one thing I'm going to look at in a way we're going to frame. Oh, man. I like that we're podcasting every week, man. It's we get in the off season, we get in the slog, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to do it. And we do it and I love it. It's great. I'm glad we're doing it. One way that I like to frame the wide receiver room is yards per route run. Yards per route run is a stat. It's kind of like a productivity metric, literally just how many yards did you have? And then divided by how many routes you ran. So it's like when you were on the field, how productive were your routes? 4 is kind of like God tier, like Marvin Mims, Quentin Johnston, Xavier Worthy, Jaden Reed, A.T. Perry, guys where it's like, you're the dude, we're getting you the ball. 3 is pretty substantial guy. 2 is you're pretty productive. And then below that is kind of like, yeah, you're around. That's great. So that's kind of the sliding scale, and we'll try to flesh that out as we go. But so yards per route run on this. Arnold, 2.09. That's 9th in the Big 12. Grimm, 2.04. That's 10th in the Big 12. I'm not making this up. Skinner, 2.00, 11th in the Big 12. Those three dudes all get the ball equally. I think that's crazy how well they distribute the ball, that all three of those guys are just right there together. Very impressive. Fairchild's at 1.53. That's 26th in the Big 12. I wrote the note here, Grant, that he's boom and bust. Like, he's not going to get a 3-yard reception, right? He's going to get that like 7-8, even up into the 20s. Like, I snuck away and got open reception and I'm bumbling, stumbling. Not very much that kind of short. He's not going to run like a flare out to the sideline or something. Mm-hmm. And then Casey is 1.79. That's 19th. Some of that speaks to the fact that Casey is a blocker a whole lot. Yeah. He blocks on 71% of his snaps, but when he does run a route, they usually get him the ball. And so that's, again, as we're watching the game and trying to talk about these teams, if Casey is running the ball or Casey's running a route, he's very likely going to get the ball there. Mm-hmm. So that's something interesting, and he's very productive, even if he doesn't run a lot of routes. And then, Grant, do you want to talk about the slot versus the outside, where they line these guys up? Because it's kind of like it feels like they have 4 very clear positions for these receivers.
Right, and it all lines up to sort of that kind of body type that we were talking about earlier. Luke Grimm lines up 74.4% of the time in the slot. Arnold lines up 85.5% out wide. Skinner's at 68.9% out wide, which is really less than I thought it would be, considering kind of the string bean type frame. But I assume they kind of use him inside of Arnold a little bit just to create some variance over the middle and things like that. And then Fairchild is 78% of the time in line. So he's not a guy that they're going to split out there, you know, like you'd see with, you know, some of these other, like Mark Andrews in the NFL, for example, where they kind of split him out and run him with the receivers. That ain't happening. He's attached to the end of the line and is going to run over the middle.
Yep. And some of that, to be fair, is like maybe he'll be like that Y kind of the sniffer role, if you will.
Sure.
But still he's in line. He's there. He is not, Mason Fairchild is many things. Travis Kelce. He is not.
No, he is not. Parker, I'm staring at numbers and I don't know what they mean.
I literally screenshotted from my R console and put it in here. So I'm sure this is the worst, like I didn't even make it a table. I just screenshotted. So I'm interested in yards after catch versus average depth of target. So like what are receivers doing when they get the ball relative to where they get the ball? 43.7% of Kansas's yards through the air came after the catch. I'd say that's pretty good. Mm. That's a whole chunk of yards that's created because Daniels hit somebody in space or they went over the top and made a move. So looking at this, Luke Grimm, 34.3% of his yards came after the catch. Lawrence Arnold, 39.5%. So both of those guys are going to get the ball and they're going to create afterwards. They are a threat to move the ball down the field after they catch the ball. Mason Fairchild, 26%. Grant, you can visualize in your mind Mason Fairchild catching the ball and either falling to the ground or stumbling a little bit. Not very much a yards after catch threat. Quentin Skinner, 15.8. He's very much your spot down the field, go get him guy.
Yeah,
right.
Jump ball.
Gonna get
guy.
The ball contested.
Yep.
Jump ball guy. Talk about contested targets here in a second. And why my contested targets is why my grade is going to be lower than I think I've been talking about this room. He's only 15.8. Devin Neal is 117% of his yards came after the catch because he only gets the ball behind the yard line or line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. And then interestingly enough, Jared Casey, 61.9% of his yards are after the catch. So unlike Fairchild, who kind of sneaks out and finds the ball in space and falls down, like, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. oh, he's open. Let's get it to him. And he converts. Casey's a little bit more. We're going to get in that 2 or 3 yard run and he's going to have some space to run, make a little bit of a play there. So a really robust room here, a really diverse room, a good mix of guys that have different roles and know those roles well. I think the athletic ceiling is what's really soiling me on this.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair.
Yeah. We look at contested target catches and Casey and Fairchild are both north of 60% of contested targets caught. Arnold only 50%, Skinner 45.5%, Grimm 37.5%.
It's not.
It's Grant. Going to our conclusions, to just transitioning straight into our conclusions there. That's a versatile room.
Yeah.
There's a lot of opportunities to stretch and they have a well-calibrated sense of identity. I still don't think there's a dude. I don't know that there's a go get it guy. Is Arnold the, hey, I'm going to get like, we need this one fourth quarter. Who am I going to? I really like this room and they're experienced, but I'm worried about their ability to consistently get open and to succeed when the targets aren't open. So I don't know that they can create a ton of separation. I don't know how well they're going to do when they can't create separation. This is a 7 out of 10 for me.
Okay. I also have them as a 7 out of 10. I think there's lots to like here. I echo your concern. There's not like an alpha on the roster, but Arnold, Fairchild, Grimm, those are enough to keep defenses worried and make them adjust. I should throw Skinner in here as well. And when you're Kansas and you have to kind of rely on wiles and just kind of like running the routes the way they're designed, that's all you can ask for. So I also have them as a 7.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair. And again, maybe, yeah, this is similar to the wide receiver room for me where the potential is there for them to be a very good Big 12 unit, but I do worry about the athleticism. Awesome. We just hit an hour. Let's freaking ride. We're deep into this, man. This is great. No one's going to listen to this.
No, point of no return. Offensive
can
line.
We do the offense and the defensive? Can we do the offensive line and the defense in 30 minutes?
Yeah, I think we can. The offensive line returns 4 out of 5 starters. Lots of gap blocking. But as you mentioned earlier, they kind of might move back into zone a little bit, or at least they tried it in the spring and just kind of playing with it, see what's going on. The question is there a true left tackle to take over for Bostic, who was good for a while? Like he was a solid left tackle that I think was kind of underappreciated when he was in Lawrence.
Yeah, I think Bostic is sneakily very good and a guy that could kind of stick around. Like I think it's underwhelming that he was on Kansas, so I think he could stick around the NFL for sure. Grant, not a great unit. I think I'm going to say
no,
not aggressively bad, but not aggressively good.
Yeah.
21.3% pressure rate on play action, which is very problematic. Not on play action, which is not great, 1 in 5. But on play action, 29.4%. Guess what Kansas offense needs a whole ton of, Grant?
Play action.
Play action. And they need time and space for the plays to develop, for the leak routes to get there from the tight ends. That makes me very, very nervous that almost 1 in 3 play action passes were pressured last year. On 3rd and 6 or longer, Grant, let's call that a passing down, 31.9% pressure rate. That is bad. That is aggressively bad. That's just not good at all. And I'm very worried about this, because just the market fundamentals, Grant, it's 2008. I'm Steve Carell. My quant has told me that, you know, these subprime mergers aren't going to work. I've gone and talked to the working class. I know that this is going to collapse. This is what I feel like with Kansas's offensive line.
I'm playing devil's advocate. I will say that we mentioned earlier that Neal is not necessarily a make a miss type of guy. So at least Kansas's offensive line does open up a lot of holes in the run game for Neal to run straight through. If we're looking for a silver lining, I think that's it.
Yeah. And very fun. I think Nowitzki, very, very mobile on the interior offensive line, reminiscent of Steve Avila when he was stuck at center.
Yep.
Where he could move so much so quickly. And I think that he does a great job. They'll run C Y counter, which is the center and the Y. They'll run Nowitzki and Fairchild and kind of move him out. But around him, they're fine. They're fine. Yeah. I'm worried about it.
Let's get to the five man. So the question really is left tackle. And I think that's going to be filled by the transfer from Wisconsin, Logan Brown, 6'6", 320. Parker, he was the highest rated offensive line recruit in the class of 2019. Reports are he was dismissed from the team.
Did you find anything about this?
I didn't find any reasoning, just that I believe it was an internal
dispute. Follow-up question. Do I want to know?
I don't. I don't think, from what I understand, it wasn't anything illegal.
Jim Leonard said the reality of what happened is that there was an internal incident here within the program and Logan Brown was dismissed from the program. It was not a choice. He was dismissed from the program. I feel like if you have to say that twice, it's not great. No. But what was he? Highest rated tackle in the 2019 class?
Correct.
He played all 13 games for Wisconsin last year?
Correct. Welcome to Lawrence, baby.
Do we have a PFF grade on him? Hold on. I didn't pull this up. I didn't even think about it. Logan Brown. Let's pull up a PFF grade.
Sure. Because the other options are Dre Doran and Bryce Cavaldue, and I don't think either one of those are exactly going to be the desired left tackle that you'd want, especially on a team that relies on play action.
2022.
I'll say the other
play
positions.
Play for Kansas in 2022?
No, he played for Wisconsin.
He started, this article says he started 13 games. He appeared in all 13. PFF does not agree with this On3 article. Regardless, 69.2 offensive grade, 57.6 pass blocking grade, passing grade, excuse me. 69.2 offensive grade, 70.6 pass blocking grade, which would have been the best. Third best behind Bostic and Pooney for Kansas offensive line, that grade of 70.6 and 70.5 run blocking grade, which would have been the best on Kansas's team by a long shot.
In theory, if I
had to replace an Earl Bostic, I would like a former five-star who has a ton of experience and has been graded out very well, right?
Plug him in. Let's do it. At left guard, you have Dom Puny. At center, of course, we mentioned Mike Nowitzki. Right guard, Michael Ford Jr. And then probably Bryce Cavaldue at right tackle, who, not to single out a kid, might be kind of a weak link. It's a fine team. I mean, look, I'm actually really intrigued by Logan Brown. Skipping to conclusions now. He was a five-star recruit. He can slot into that role. Nowitzki, I think, can be a really solid lineman. As you said, he's agile. Look, the pass blocking has to get better, period, point blank. If Brown can make it just a little bit better, I like the run blocking enough to make this unit an 11 out of 15. I really do.
Interesting. I'm not far off of that. And at left tackle, they could have Dre Doran. They could have Cavaldue could shift over and either Doran or Brown could take the right tackle. I don't think Calvadue is very good at right tackle, so I wouldn't shift him over, but they have options at least. They're a fine run blocking team. They have good experience. I think simplification and more zone blocking should only help that. The problem is pass blocking. Nowitzki, Calvadue, Ford, all under a 60 grade in pass pro. And Neal out of the backfield, 41.4 grade. He's terrible at blocking. Yeah. And so they can't even really do a lot there. They have to put Casey or Fairchild in the backfield if they're going to block. If they have to think about keeping six or seven guys in, the offense is going to be super limited because then you lose one of those weapons that's going out in coverage. They make hay extending plays, but can they do that well with Daniel's mobility, not having, you know, only having three options for a pass? Calvadue had five penalties at right tackle. It's kind of a mess. The limiting factor in the offense, in my opinion, is this offensive line. I'm going to go 10 out of 15.
Okay. So for those keeping score at home, Parker and I both rate the Kansas offense a 36 out of 50. Love that.
So I'm higher on quarterback room. You're higher on offensive line, and the rest was the same.
That is correct. Yep.
Interesting. Very fun. Very, very fun.
Defense, Parker, will you give us your nerd stats while?
Yeah, I got to scroll back. Grant, this preview, have we talked about how this preview document is like 17 pages long?
It's 12 pages, but close enough. We have pictures.
Well, it's like 17. Grant, Kansas's defense was not what you would call good in any sense of the word. They were 115th in defensive EPA per play, 120th in success rate on defense, 101st in the pass, 124th in the rush, 126th in points per drive allowed, 106th in EPA per pass allowed, 118th in EPA per rush, 129th in echo rate, 81st in points per echo. So if you were going to say one good thing about the Kansas defense, you would say at least teams didn't score every drive.
Yeah.
They were 94th in starting field position, allowing an average starting field position of almost the 30-yard line. 109th on early downs EPA, 126th on third and fourth down success. It wasn't great, Grant. Yeah. It just wasn't great.
It was. I would venture to say bad, to be honest with you.
It was bad. And again, I think the narrative is like, oh, Daniels got hurt. Otherwise, they would have been rolling. And I'm like, dude, I think this defense just didn't even have a two deep of FBS players. I don't even think they had 11 FBS players.
I really don't either.
They just ran out of gas. Yeah.
I'm not real sure they have 11 now.
They don't have 11 in every position. They don't have one for every position. They might have 11 guys, but not enough to play what they want. This is not in the spirit of our like talking ourselves into Kansas. I love the offense. The defense terrifies me. The ceiling on this team is absolutely determined by the defense. But man, because the defense is so rough, the floor gets grim.
Right. So let's hit some quick central tenets. So your DC is Brian Borland. He's been with Lance Leipold since the like Wisconsin Whitewater days. He's a Leipold lifer. Lots of cover two. They were four down mostly, 4-3 with some 2-4-5 thrown in. As noted earlier, they returned 80% of production from last year, the most in the conference. That includes their starting safeties, their starting cornerbacks, and their starting linebackers. The back half is experienced, if not the most talented, but notably that does not include the defensive line. Which, okay, considering how much they lost, should tell you how little they produced. If they still returned 80% of their defense and they still lost basically their entire front four. That's how bad the defensive
line like was. A legitimately good player on the front four.
Malcolm Lee was really good at edge. Lonnie Phillips was decent at edge as well. They also lost Caleb Sampson, Sam Burt, and Eddie Wilson, all defensive tackles. Eric Gilliard transferred out from linebacker, and Lorenzo McCaskill graduated. Also a linebacker. And those are notable.
Lonnie Phelps, undrafted free agent to the Browns.
Yeah. I thought Malcolm Lee was fantastic. I mean, your key questions are, who's going to replace those upfront losses? And can the back end make up for those inefficiences?
They were kind of a hating-ass defensive line. I'm remembering this
now. They were. I know. And so they've added a bunch of players. And we'll kind of break this down a little bit more. But Patrick Joyner.
Can I butt in?
Can
I butt in? So you threw 2-4-5 in here. When they're playing four down mostly, why would they do that? Why do we do that?
So you go there on third down, it prioritizes speed over size, and Kansas doesn't have size. pretty much anywhere, especially up front. So it makes sense when your entire defensive line is gone and you need to cause some chaos in the pass rush. Robinson and Joyner, who we'll talk about a little bit later, may be able to play a bit of a hybrid role from like hand in the dirt edge rusher to stand up edge rusher and kind of play more on the outside of those defensive ends. You can also crash a linebacker down, but it's just a way to prioritize speed. And in the passing down, you want those guys to like flood the quarterback and not necessarily worry about maintaining gap integrity across the middle on as you would on a running down.
So that goes with maybe I don't have 11 FBS starters, one for every position.
Correct.
I can get a guy in a role that like he can't play all three downs, but he could play one down at this kind of hybrid outside linebacker position.
So yes, I agree, but we'll talk about it later. I'm not sure they have four linebackers that I would want on the field, but we'll get to that. Yeah. So like I said, so they add in that edge role, Patrick Joyner, who's a three-star from Utah State. J.B. Brown is a linebacker, is a three-star from Bowling Green. Demarius McGee is a three-star from LSU corner. I think he might be able to see some playing time. Devin Phillips is a defensive lineman from Colorado State. And two Minnesota transfers on the line, Gage Keys and Austin Booker. So let's talk about the defensive line real quick.
All six of these guys are going to start, right?
I'm not sure. Because here's the deal. Gage Keys, I think, may have taken legitimately like seven snaps in his entire career. And he was just like a three-star recruit.
Kansas' problem in the past is that they didn't have enough guys to practice. So they have an FBS guy to practice against.
You're going to have guys to practice. My insert John Travolta meme is, where the hell is everybody? Like, I Lee and Phelps were legit good players, but they're gone. They're going to have to rely on transfers and unproven players up front. So Joyner should be an instant start. At edge, 31 tackles for Utah State last year. Slot him in, starting edge rusher. Jeremy Robinson should probably play at the other edge. He had 28 tackles and three sacks on 440 snaps last year. He was a decent rotation player at edge, and I think he's going to be the other starting guy on the end. But the interior line is going to have to be built through the portal. Caleb Taylor is 6'4", 300. He's a junior. He could see time at starter. Devin Phillips is going to slot right in. He started every single game for Colorado State last year. Again, another instant starter. Keys played extremely, extremely sparingly, like I said, at Minnesota. You could also throw in Tommy Dunn Jr. As a rotation guy, 6'3", 310. He's a redshirt sophomore. So he and Caleb Taylor, I think, will kind of vie for that other inside lineman spot across from Phillips. Parker, it's not just turnover in player personnel. There's turnover defensive line coach. So Kansas State splits their defensive end and defensive tackle coaches. Jim Panagos took over defensive tackle coach February 1st, coming from Rutgers. So it is a completely new defensive interior and a completely new
defensive line coach. Defensive line powerhouse Rutgers, excuse me.
Yeah, exactly. Right. From what I assume was an esteemed tenure. It is bad. It is really bad.
I hate to be this negative, dude, because they were okay. Like I said that earlier. They were a hating ass defensive line last year. They're legitimately kind of feisty. Had a couple dudes.
Let's say this. It is projected to be bad.
Grant, this might be the worst unit in the Big 12. Like,
yeah, you said that. And I don't disagree.
How are they going to stop the run?
I don't think they are.
How are they going to get pressure? How are they going to take any kind of focus off of cornerbacks being isolated while opposing quarterbacks have 7 seconds to run around and throw and find an open dude? I'm so down on this unit. It sucks.
Yeah. You have them as what's your grade?
I have a 4 out of 15.
It's really bad. I have them as a 5, and I think the transfers do provide some intrigue. I think Phillips is going to be good, or at least solid. And I think Joyner has a lot of talent. I have them as a 5. This is a line starting straight from scratch. Taylor and Dunn could be good players down the road. This is the bottom of a cycle, is what this is.
Yeah.
And Leipold, they're trying to paper over it through a portal. So,
yep.
This is bottom of the cycle. It's only up from here, but good God almighty, it doesn't look good to start. I wouldn't say the linebackers are much better. I think I had them down as the Oxford English Dictionary definition of mid. Rich Miller and Tywan Berryhill Jr. return. Good. At least they're experienced. But Lorenzo McCaskill graduated, and Gilliard mentioned, I hate to make fun of a kid. I hope he's happy. Eric Gilliard transferred from Kansas to UConn in football. Not basketball, which would be like, oh, wow, who is that? The next, number 10 draft pick or whatever. No, transferred from Kansas to UConn in football.
Yeah.
Experiences, you know, I don't. Look, the key question is who's going to step up and fill that third role in the linebacking core, especially in a modified 2-4-5, which is what I'm really worried about for that fourth role. So Craig Young, who started his career at Ohio State, it's weird. He's listed at like 8 different things. He started off playing safety and corner last year, but played most of the year at linebacker, and now he's solidly listed as a linebacker.
He could play that swing role. That in the 2-4-5, he could be the 5. He could be the 5th guy. Yeah.
Yeah, he absolutely could. Also, like in a 4-3, wow, my voice just cracked. I am 12 years old again. In a 4-3, he can be sort of your main, like, hey, I'm going to match up on the running back, linebacker. And it kind of be
Grant, your follow up question.
Yeah.
Are you nervous about puberty or no?
I have a girlfriend. She just goes to a different school. You don't know her. but definitely expecting the coverage.
And yeah, then, I think he'll be that guy. And as they kind of move packages, he'll be flex a little bit. But also maybe at Ohio State they wanted him to be corner and kind of that coverage guy. And he's like, no, I want to beef up and be a linebacker. And maybe he's put on some weight and moved it. You don't know why he transferred down, what that could be, what they could try and have him fill the role as.
Right. I mean, just looking at other options. I mean, J.B. Brown transferred in from Bowling Green. He was a rotation guy there, not really a starter.
Practice.
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, Parker, there's no one else on the roster to put there. That's the problem, is Brown's legitimately like your fourth best option. I mean, looking at the roster, there's just no more guys.
And that's what happened. And now the defensive line is worse too. That's what happened last year, is because the linebackers didn't have linebackers last year. It didn't have them. They just didn't exist.
Right.
And it's not that much better now. What's so hard about this is like the lack of depth, right? I talk about this every time I talk about Kansas. Like David Beatty with his cold, dead eyes looked at me and was like, I had 38 scholarship players when I walked in the room and 6 of them turned around and walked out. You just can't get out of that. That's so hard, and they're doing it, but it's just, you can't do that overnight. And the defensive side of the ball just exposes Kansas' lack of depth. Like, it's really tough because maybe a couple of these guys, like if you plop them in the right situation, could develop and define Power 5 starter dudes, right? Yeah. Like fringe Power 5 contributors. But they have the raw talent to develop there under the right circumstances, but then you just have terrible circumstances here. It's so hard on the defensive side of the ball, man. I empathize with them so much right now because, like, what can you do? Who's going to come play in this defense and get exposed, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's consistency here at least. I mean, you bring back Miller and Berryhill. And Young, I think, is actually going to be like a really good, okay, I'm a linebacker now, and I'm excited to be here. I have him as a 5 out of 10. And I think you had him as what, a 6? Is that right?
I'm being too nice. I think I was too mean. Okay, so here's what I'm going to do on the record. No, I think the defensive line deserves a 4. 6 is probably too optimistic, but I'm going to leave it. I have them as a 6. I believe. Okay. I shouldn't believe, but I felt so negative about the defense, man. And maybe there's, I don't know. It's rough. It's rough.
It's really rough.
So right now you have Kansas. We both have Kansas as a 10 out of 20 of the first 2 units of the defense.
Correct. Golly. The defensive backs do make it better, although I want – this is a visual medium, but Parker, I would just want you to look at the images we have here in the preview, and I want you to look at the safety standing closest to the referee in the first image. See him there? That is Kenny Logan Jr. And then I want you to scroll down to the second image and see him standing on the Big 12 logo as a Kansas State receiver runs straight by him.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So even with Young shifting to linebacker – you still return Melo Dotson at corner. I think corner is the strength of this defense, if you have to pick one. Melo Dotson at corner.
I think I agree with that.
Yeah, Kobe Bryant.
He's so experienced.
So experienced. So Dotson played 800 snaps last year. He had 2 picks. Jacoby Bryant, who now goes by Kobe Bryant, spelled differently, so Kobe Bryant, played 600 snaps. Nice. Yeah, 3 picks, 8 pass breakups, had a 71 coverage grade. Decent at corner.
That's great.
And Kalon Gervin is a decent, like, slot corner and kind of a rotation guy if he needs to be there. Logan at safety is not – I mean, Kenny Logan and O.J. Burrow.
Before we go to safety. Yeah. So, one, Melo and Kobe as a combination of cornerbacks is excellent. speaks to my early 2000s basketball lover. Bryant is much better than Dotson.
Yes.
But Bryant is not necessarily good just because they could pick on Dotson.
Yes.
So that's both correct. Of those guys should improve with a ton of experience, but I'm worried about the overall quality there. Interestingly, I think Kalon Gervin and Young at linebacker will be kind of like complements. Mm-hmm. And depending on like you might see on second down, Young be in there, but then on third and long, Gervin come in to be more of that like slot nickel kind of a guy. Yeah. I think those are complementary roles. So it's weird to separate defensive back and linebacker, knowing that like there's going to be some crossover there. Oh no, I think I lost you. What am I going to talk about? I don't know anything here. I can't just let the listener stand on their own. I lost Grant. So if we move to the safeties, Kenny Logan and OJ Burrow's return. They're both giving up over 70% completion. It's not great when they're targeted, Grant. Marvin Grant is there and is, again, a fringe P5 starter, but he has also been bad. Like, this defense was so bad.
Yeah.
They gave up 42 points to West Virginia.
That's so hard to do. So they play a ton
of. They gave up 11 points to Iowa State.
They play a ton of cover two. I wish the corners would play more press man instead of sitting back a little bit in the zone. But I think the lack of safety help requires them to sit back because Logan and Burrows and Grant aren't going to be there over the top to help them. They just don't play their roles well.
And again, maybe with an offseason, if we're seeing on a tape, they've seen it way sooner than us. They have strategies to address it. But like, gosh, this sounds mean. Grant, this sounds way too mean for a preview where we're talking ourselves into Kansas. How much more can you improve this caliber of athlete?
We'll find out.
I hate it.
We'll find out. Listen, this is the best unit on defense for Kansas, which isn't necessarily a good sign, but the corners are the strength, and hopefully the safeties improve.
The best unit on Kansas defense is like the best gas station sushi in Alabama.
It's called damning with faint praise. being nice, I'm going to give them a 7.
Okay. Frick, I'm giving them a 7 too. I like the corners. I hate this.
The corners are fun.
Okay. This is very fun to do this exercise where we put the numbers on it because like I immediately want to change my Kansas numbers. As we've like talked about them and talked to us, I think this is very fun. I'm 7 of 10. That's fine. We've put it here. They have dudes. They're like Kenny Logan's a dude. He might not be a good defender, but I feel like he's a dude.
Exactly.
They have to take a big step, and that's going to be hard because I'm trying to separate out like if you plucked them down with any front seven in the FBS, they might be pretty okay. But they're stretched so thin with like they're not going to get pressure at the offensive line. The linebackers are going to get exposed in the run game. These dudes are just set up to get teed off on. And that is hard. That's just hard. So I'm going to give them a 7 because I think if you just put them on a random Power 5 team, they would be a lot better than they look right now. Yeah. But they're in a really bad spot here.
So you and I both have Kansas's defense as a 17 out of 35. So less than 50%. The only thing we have left to rate is coaches. I mentioned earlier I pulled our episode where we ranked the Big 12 coaches. So I have Lance Leipold as an 11 out of 15.
You did?
I did. 11 out of 15.
Coaching and special teams.
Okay.
I had 12 as a coach. I actually am going to put that at a 10.
Okay.
Because I think their special teams is really bad. And the fact that he like specifically mentioned it after spring has me very concerned.
That's not a good sign. Okay.
Yeah.
So that means I have Kansas as a 64 out of 100. You have them as a 63.
An average team is like a 65. An average FES team is like a 65. So just doing a little bit of back of napkin math, Grant, I would have Kansas as against an average team in the FBS as a 44.0% win probability, just against the average.
I have them at 47. Yeah.
which means that the probability of them making a bowl on my end would be 44.5% this year.
Interesting. Okay. Mine would be actually 52.9%, but I assume that you count in a couple of under teams there. Okay. Well, that's, you know what? Yeah. We're going to rip through this because we are at the hour and a half mark. It is time to do predictions, Parker.
Okay, are we both typing? Is that okay? Can we do that? I'm going to type a slash, and I'll go after the slash. You go before the slash.
All right, great. Home for Missouri State, W.
Dub. Bobby Petrino, who's not there anymore. Not less fun to make fun of him.
I know. Well, we can still make fun of him, Mr. Texas A&M. Home for Illinois, loss.
I have to think about, so I haven't done an actual prediction on Illinois. So that the non-conference stuff is going to be a little murky for us.
Sure.
They're home for Illinois. I'm actually going to go win.
Okay.
Because they lose Brown and they lose a ton of defenders, and Kansas might boat race Illinois like 62 to 40 or something. Like, yeah, I'm going to say win.
Okay. At Nevada, Nevada was bad last year, weren't they?
Nevada was, can you vamp for a second and let me look up cfb-graphs.com?
I seem to remember them not being necessarily good, but at
Nevada 2-10, 101st in EPA per play margin, 119th on offense, 126th on defense. Again, boat race. Give me the dub. 3-0 ranked. I'm putting ranked in
points. No. Kansas is ranked.
Kansas is ranked after 3-0.
Home for BYU. They are no longer ranked.
I have to believe that BYU is going to play defense this year. We'll do the preview on them, but like for the love of God,
you don't have to believe anything. At Texas, I have that as a loss.
I don't think they'll win at Texas. I'm going to go loss there as well. So I'm at 3-2. You're at
two and four. Two and three. Home for UCF. This is a toss up. You know what? I'll give them a win.
Okay, these are subject. We're going to write all these down. These are subject to us changing them based on our correct where our rankings get.
This is I think just vibes. All of this is just vibes.
Yeah,
right now
I'm going lost just because you went win. I don't feel like home field advantage is a very big deal for Kansas.
No, we talked about
and
that.
So
in the last pod. Yeah.
So I just don't think that I'm going to give them the edge there.
Okay. At Oklahoma State, I have that as a loss.
Oh, this gets sad. Dang it. So I'm at 3 and then I go 3-0 and then lose 4 straight.
Yeah. And then home for Oklahoma. Sucks. I got more bad news.
Okay. Then they go to the bye ahead of Oklahoma. But yeah, they're going to lose that game. Yeah.
At Iowa State.
Oh, this sucks.
The Hunter Deckers is going to put OJ Burrows in a
bad game. The defense is so bad, Grant.
Home for Texas Tech. And then almost home for Kansas State. Dang it.
I'm not having fun with the Kansas preview anymore.
And then home for Cincinnati, I had that as a loss.
No.
Well, Saturday.
We are committing to the bit. Cincinnati is going to be the worst team in the Big 12.
All right.
Oh, no.
1, 2, 3, 4. You have them as 1, 4, and 8. But okay, listen.
What, an 8 in the Big 12? No, that's so sad.
Last year, I think 4-8 was like our hell yeah, let's go Kansas preview. Like, okay, they're going to rule 4-8.
Let's land the plane with positivity. Last year, little bit of a fluke. Got a West Virginia and a Houston team who really weren't, you know, taking them seriously, and got an Oklahoma State walking wounded team to get to a bowl. They can score on anybody. So, like, do I actually think that they will lose 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games in a row? No. My confidence on them losing 8 games in a row is very small. But 4-8 in the grand scheme of Kansas would still be good.
Yeah.
Let's look at Kansas school history. Kansas hasn't won 4 games. Excuse me. Kansas hasn't won 4 games since Mangino in 2009.
Yeah.
Aside from last year. So 6-7 and then 4-8 would be Kansas's best 2-year stretch since Mangino in 2009.
Since Todd Reesing was slinging the pigskin around.
Todd MF and Reesing.
Listen, last year was proof of concept for Leipold. If they go 4-8 with, like, at the bottom of their defensive line cycle and with this offensive line, that is great.
I'm still in on Leipold if they go 4-8. Absolutely.
Parker, as always, the Kansas preview is our longest episode of the year, and we are going to continue that tradition. Parker, this has been the Purple Theory Podcast.
We could have gone longer.
We could absolutely could have. Want to give a shout out to Bram Kohlhaus and prayers up. My name is Grant McGalliard. You can find me on Twitter at Grant McGalliard. It's spelled like it sounds with all those vowels. He is Parker Fleming. He is at Stats of War on Twitter. We are brought to you by the Republic of Football, the Dave Campbell's Texas Football Podcast Network, and we are very proud to be with them. Go check them out and all our affiliated podcasts. Oh, last thing we got to do. Who are we doing next week? I have the random generator pulled up. You ready?
Okay, wait, hold on. Do you? Okay, hold on. Because I got to put the other schools in a random generator. Okay, hold on. So well, schools are Baylor, Iowa State. Oh, you set this up already.
Yes.
You have a number attached to each school.
I just have the schools and then it'll just pop one up as the first one.
Okay, that's great. Do that. Okay, yeah. so who are we doing next week?
We are doing Iowa State.
We might be going in reverse order of standings.
But we're randomizing it each time, right? Just removing the schools we've already done.
Yeah.
So we are doing the Iowa State.
Iowa State cranking it out. Good Lord, you guys are going to get so sick of me talking about Hunter Deckers. Oh, man, we're going to talk about – it's going to be Zapruder next week with, like, mirroring film and left-hander quarterbacks. It's going to be great. Thanks for listening to Purple Theory Podcast. I can't promise the video in this is going to be worth anything, but next week we will try to have the stuff set up where we can live stream because I think that would be fun. Until then, be well, and we'll be back with the preview next week.
Adios.